Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Normally when I write a talk, I come up with a bunch of different things and then sort of mix it together like soup and then hopefully come out with a good soup. I didn't get a chance to do that this week, and I was sort of debating whether or not to just let sit in the second period or I could sort of wing it from these bunch of notes. So I decided it was probably good practice for me to do that. And this relates to what the practice circle is going to be about later, which is no suffering, no cause of suffering, and no end to suffering. Now, I think most people's first reaction to that is, what do you mean there is no suffering? All you have to do is pick up the paper or listen to the news, and God knows there's suffering all over the world. So why would it say that? Why would it say no suffering, no cause of suffering, and no end to suffering? So always must remember that there's two sides to reality, just like the hand. You know, I've done this a million times before, but one side of the hand is the relative and the other side is the absolute. But it's one hand. So no suffering, no cause of suffering, and no end to suffering. They're ideas. They're concepts. But these concepts and ideas are intrinsically empty. So the way that I understand this is, in order to approach suffering, which when we look at the world from a relative point of view, of course there's suffering. But in order to approach that suffering, if we're going to be effective and not make it worse, we must empty ourselves of any ideas that we have about suffering, where suffering came from, and about putting it to an end. Because if we cling to our ideas about what this means, in all likelihood, we're going to make a mess. So how does this work, right? How do we do anything about suffering if we don't have some idea what to do? Well, the answer to that is that what this is calling us to do, what these words are calling us to do, is to empty ourselves of these concepts and simply bear witness to the suffering. Letting go, bear witness, and the idea. But just present ourselves to the suffering without any ideas and just listen. And usually what happens when we do that, something comes through us and we know how we should or how we should not respond to suffering. Now, I've told this story before, but a number of years ago, probably 3 or 4 years ago now, there was this very publicized case about this guy who, I think it was in Chicago, this guy who had taken 3 women captive and kept them captive for, I think it was 10 years. And in those 10 years, he had gotten one pregnant, raped all 3, was abusive of them. I mean, it was really, really a horrible situation. And I remember my reaction to that and to the suffering of those women was just outrageous. You know, it was like, my God, how could somebody be that sick? You know, what a horrible, horrible human being would do that. And so that was my experience of that suffering. And what I brought to the table about that suffering was a very limited view of suffering, which basically, if I was in a position to act, I would have acted in a very wrong way. And the reason why I say that was, you know, a week or two after this, and I had read about it and was outraged and had all the emotions that you could have about it, I was driving my car, and all of a sudden, I found myself filled with compassion for the guy that did this. And my first reaction to that was, like, to push it away. And God forbid anybody should know, you know, that I, a Zen teacher of all things, would have compassion for this horrible human being. And then I realized, if everything is one, if everything is empty, he is part of us, as horrible as that may be. And, you know, maybe he needs to go to jail. Not maybe he needs to go to jail and he needs to be held responsible for that. And he created a lot of suffering. But when I was driving along, I was thinking, my God, what suffering does a human being have to go through to wind up being somebody like this? And I started thinking about suffering. And the suffering in this situation, certainly there was compassion for the victims of this. But if everything is one, there has to be compassion for somebody that's this sick. And if we're going to respond to compassion to him, we better be clear. We better really bear witness to who this person is. Otherwise, we don't try to consider, how do you prevent somebody like this from behaving this way? You know, how has the system failed us that nobody understood, for example, that this guy was mentally ill? And he never got any services for that mental illness, right? So doing this broadens what it means to present ourselves to suffering, right? If we put aside all the stuff, you know, the other stuff about no suffering, no end to suffering, it makes us, I think, careless when we bring ourselves to suffering, when we offer ourselves to suffering. And that's why it's very important to simply bear witness to what's in front of us, right? And if I had done that, I wouldn't have made the mistake of leaving this part out. You know, that wasn't really bearing witness. It was reacting to the situation. And in doing this, I was also making two. I was making myself and the situation two, right? I was breaking it up into parts. And some parts were okay and some parts were disgusting. And on the relative level, all that is true. But if we look at it more deeply, we see it in a different way. So this emptiness, when we empty ourselves of concepts, what happens is, I think, this is my experience, that the one who suffers and the one who wants to help the one who suffers are the same. Right? There's no separation. Again, this is from Bernie Glassman, but I use this a lot because I think it's a beautiful way to take this up. You know, if he uses this example, right? I slam this hand in the door, and so there's this hand, and so from a relative point of view, it may happen that this hand looks over and say, "Well, that hand's not me. I don't really have time. I have to get to work. I can't really tend to him. Somebody else will take care of it." Right? So that's one particular way to relate suffering from a relative point of view. But if we relate to suffering from oneness, from emptiness, there isn't even any thought, right? This hand gets slammed in the door and this hand does this. That's because this hand is empty. It doesn't go through this whole process of, well, should I? I don't want to get involved, or I don't really know anything about helping a slammed hand, or all that. It's just simply attending. That's free of concepts. Bernie relates this experience that he had. Now, to me, the important part about this experience was, this experience didn't come up through sitting in a library or sitting on his cushion processing a bunch of thoughts about how to end suffering. Does suffering have a beginning? Does it have a middle? And does it have an end? He was in the aerospace industry at the time. He was, I forget what he, but he's got a PhD and he did something. He was a scientist. And he was driving to work. And all of a sudden, no thinking, he was driving to work, he had a job to do. Bam! He's driving his car, has to pull over because he realizes that his mission in life is to feed all hungry spirits. Now, what does that mean? That means he perceived the oneness of the world and that he wanted to dedicate his life to feeding the hungry spirits. Hungry spirits means the people in the world. All of us are hungry spirits, hungry in some way. And so he devoted himself to social action, to getting off the cushion and going into the world and doing what he could to eliminate suffering. But again, you can't do that if you are confined by, you know, you get trapped by the idea, well, there's no suffering, the cause of suffering, and there's no end to suffering, right? That's the way of approaching it where you see the emptiness of it. no beginning, no end, right? You just let all of those things go. And at the very same time, the other hand is, of course there's suffering. Of course something has to be done about it. So these two go together. But in order to tend to the relative side, we have to empty ourselves. Like I was saying before, my relationship with what happened with this guy. We have to empty ourselves and simply be present to what's going on in front of us with no preconceptions. And usually what happens is the response, what's needed to be done, comes through us. We don't create it in the usual sense where we put A and B and C together and put it there, right? And I'm going to share with you a quote. I think this also comes from Bernie. Anything anyone is doing to make themselves whole in their own life, or realizing the way, or enlightenment, or whatever you want to call it, these acts are acts of service. Because that if we realize the oneness of life, each person is serving every other person and is reducing suffering. So you don't have to become famous about serving others. We can do that in small ways every day of our life. We can behave, we can act in situations from a place of oneness. Even if it's one person at a time, each act of compassion that arises out of emptiness, just the willingness to serve, right? Just be open, right? To serve. How can I help? With no idea how that's possible. Sometimes it's just a smile. A smile can go a long way in somebody's day. Now, there's also, that fits into all this, is the idea of impermanence. Actually, it's an experience. I mean, again, from the relative side, everything is impermanent. Things are constantly changing. We see it from the absolute part. There's just this moment. Just this moment. Future, past, disappear into just this moment. But that's not what happens for most people who live just out of the relative side. Trying to keep things the same is comfort, right? Trying to keep things predictable is comfort. It's safe. People are afraid of change. Not everybody, but many people are afraid of change. So if that's the case, you cannot just simply bear witness. Imagine the experience of somebody who likes to keep everything the same when their child goes off to college. Or even before that, when their child starts to push away and become a separate person. Somebody who wants things not to change is going to have a mighty struggle with their kids moving into independence, separation and individuation, psychological terms. Or when their kid does what's natural. Goes off to college or goes and travels the world. For people who want predictability, for people who will not accept that all things are changing all the time, they're going to suffer. But if you let go of the concepts and you just present yourself with an empty mind, your relationship to that situation will be very different and much more likely to be compassionate. One last thing. I don't remember where this came from, but it just struck me as having a lot of value. Somebody said that there's a difference between suffering and pain. Pain is pain, you know. Ow, that hurts. Right? But what I tell myself about the pain that I'm in, like it wasn't fair for that to happen to me. And who does this person... Now what I'm doing is I'm creating suffering for myself. By the story that I tell myself about what just happened. So we're not saying there's no pain. What we're saying is that another way to create suffering is how do we talk to ourselves about what just happened? And many times we make it worse. We create suffering for ourselves and for other people too. So that's it from a bunch of notes. Thanks for listening.